From WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. New Hanover County, following the trend of many other states and municipalities, filed a lawsuit last month against opioid manufacturers and distributors. In the suit, the county alleges not just negligence by these huge drug companies. The county accuses them of unfair and deceptive trade practices, civil conspiracy, fraud, and racketeering. Also in December, Brunswick County commissioners passed a resolution indicating they might file their own suit, in which they would seek damages from these companies for the public costs of the opioid epidemic. The scope of this public health crisis, both nationally and locally, is nothing short of alarming. Wilmington has landed at the top of one widely publicized list by Castlight Health as the number one city for opioid abuse. North Carolina, according to New Hanover County's lawsuit, has an opioid prescription rate of 96.6 per 100 persons, ranking 13th in the country, and a benzodiazepine prescription rate of 45.3 per 100, ranking 15th. Fatal drug overdoses in North Carolina cost the state $1.3 billion in 2015. And, says the complaint, opioid abuse is responsible for a more than 35% increase in the number of kids in foster care from 2010 to 2016. Given that impact, which public policies deserve to be funded and implemented? To give us an idea of how the New Hanover County lawsuit is proceeding and where county officials are in their thinking about dealing with the opioid epidemic, we have Pat Sykes, a Brunswick County commissioner who also serves on the boards of Trillium Health, Brunswick County Health and Human Services, the North Carolina Association of County Commissioners Health and Human Services Board, and the National Association of Justice and Public Safety. Pat Sykes, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you, Rachel. Thank you for having us today. I know this is an important topic for everybody in our community, and we're hoping that we're moving in the right directions to solve these problems.
We also have Woody White, chairman of New Hanover County's Board of Commissioner. He serves as the county representative on the Cape Fear Community College Board of Trustees and its long-range planning committee, the Cape Fear Museum, Southeastern Economic Development Commission, and Southeastern Partnership, and the Wilmington Chamber of Commerce. Woody White, welcome to the program.
Thank you for inviting me, Rachel.
And we're inviting you to join the conversation. Have you or someone close to you struggled with opioid addiction? Do you think local governments are doing what they can and should to solve this public health crisis? Do you think substance abuse treatment should not be in the domain of county government? Tell us about it during this live Thursday edition by calling us at 910-343-1138 or emailing us today at coastline@whqr.org. Woody White, let's start with you. Explain to us, first of all, New Hanover County's lawsuit, which was filed last month. Earlier this week, U.S. District Court Judge Dan Polster conducted the first proceeding. Tell us about that and what that meant for the case.
Yeah, it was 48 hours ago, Rachel. It was Tuesday of this week. It was in Cleveland. And he was the judge assigned to oversee more than 200 of these cases that span across the country, New Hanover County as a plaintiff being one of those cases. Our case was assigned to him, like all the others. And what happens when you have these large issues is they all get funneled into one bucket, if you will, and assigned to one judge. And he or she then dictates how they will proceed. So we still don't know, nobody knows with certainty how lawsuits are ever going to go, but we have an idea. First off, we have a tremendous faith and confidence in our claims and the fact that we are going to hold those responsible for causing this epidemic accountable. So we're very hopeful and feel strongly about that. But 48 hours ago was the first real preliminary matter. And it was an opportunity for the judge to have about 100 lawyers in the courtroom. They had to bring extra chairs in. And he sat them all down and he said, welcome, good morning. And I'm paraphrasing, but this is the first meeting we've had. And out of those 100 lawyers, you can imagine you can't just have 100 lawyers sit at a table. So there's a process of designating 4, 5, 6, 7, kind of a leader, an executive team, if you will, that represents the interests of everyone. And he's in the process of deciding who those people are going to be. And so this was the first opportunity that the defendants and the plaintiffs, New Hanover County, for example, and then all the drug manufacturers and distributors have seen him and had an opportunity to be in a courtroom since the cases have been filed. So you walked in. I'm sorry. Do you have a question?
Well, we're gonna get to some of the surprising observations that he made. And thank you for sharing that transcript of this proceeding. We'll get to those in just a moment. But what is the outcome of this particular proceeding and what's going to happen next?
All right. What happens next is over the next, well, typically he picks the leadership and then there's a trial schedule set for evidence gathering and depositions and, you know, all sorts of things that typically span a year or two. But what he said in that hearing, which was so remarkable and extraordinary 2 days ago, was in the next 60 days, I want you all back here and we're going to talk about how we can solve this problem this year. Now, that may not happen. The defendants may not open up their checkbooks and acknowledge liability and write a big check. The plaintiffs may not believe whatever, if any money is offered, is enough and the case does proceed to court. Who knows? But having a judge come out of the gate saying those types of definitive things and the way that he said it is extraordinary, and we'll have to see. But you'll see something happen in the next 60 days, and we'll have more clarity on where the lawsuit will go.
And can you just briefly explain, it's very detailed in the actual suit, but what is New Hanover County accusing these companies of doing? Why are they trying to hold them liable for the public costs of the opioid epidemic?
Well, the suit alleges a lot of things, but it basically patterns and follows in the wake of what has already been found on the federal level, which are extreme violations of two things. First, failure to monitor and report distribution numbers. That's what the distributors are charged under the Controlled Substance Act by Congress of doing. How many pills are being sold in what regions? And if you look at a chart, and you see the number of pills, for example, in 2008 versus the number of pills in 2014, the population hasn't increased proportionally. Pain management hasn't increased proportionally. All of a sudden, pills being prescribed and sent have increased exponentially. It's remarkable to see. And so part of our suit says they know they weren't following it, tracking it, reporting it properly, and they're negligent in that regard. And so that leads to more addiction services. And then secondly, the fraud associated with overstating the pain management and understating the addiction. And so it's not unlike cigarettes, for example. It's not apples to apples, but there are some gray area overlaps in those analysis. And that's the bulk of what our claim is about.
Big tobacco is even referenced in this suit.
Yeah, exactly.
Pat Sykes, Brunswick County Commissioner, where is Brunswick County right now in terms of its consideration of filing its own suit?
Okay, right now we have started the process, but we have not filed the lawsuit. We do have the same law firms at New Hanover County, so we will be following the same suit with them. It should be happening soon, probably within a month or so. Probably a month, I would think, since the court case has already started. But since we're using the same law firm, I'm sure it's going to be moved up. But to add to what Woody has said, I think the false marketing and the failure to disclose the risk of the addiction is another area that pharmaceuticals and distributors are going to be accused of. Failure to monitor suspicious orders. You know, anytime orders coming in, are they questioned? You know, are you ordering too much?
When you think about filing this suit, of course, one of the questions that arises is what will the cost be to Brunswick County taxpayers? Have Brunswick County commissioners kind of laid out what they're willing to lay out for this?
There is no cost at this time. It's based on a contingency fee. So the law firm will follow suit, and whatever happens, they will have a fee that the company will pay for. The county taxpayers will pay nothing.
Woody White, how much has New Hanover County laid out at this point for this lawsuit?
Zero. Now, there'll be manpower associated with compiling records from the hospital, from the sheriff's department, from first responders, from social services, all of the damages that we incur and continue to incur every single hour, to be honest with you, from this horrible scourge. So compiling that data and shipping it off, there's some non-monetary expense associated with that, but no money. It's not going to cost us any cash outlay because of the contingency fee arrangement with the law firm that we hired.
So it looks at this point as if there is no downside. There was no risk to the county in filing this lawsuit.
That was a big deciding factor for some of our other commissioners because, you know, it's not fun going to court. Nobody has a good time doing it. It's always risk. It's fraught with
It's what you peril. Do for a living.
Well, how can it not be fun?
That's very true. Some of us have fun some days, but most of the time you're dealing with people at their worst moment. Nobody wants to be there. There's anxiety associated with, are we going to win? Are we going to lose? And so a lot of that risk has been, you know, put off onto the plaintiff's lawyers, and that's the way it ought to be in this type of situation. I think our risk is that we do, let's say we lose. Let's say, you know what, this doesn't go, we get zero money. At least we've accomplished a lot more awareness. At least a lot more legislators are paying attention, and they'll do things proactively in the future to stem the scourge and the numbers of these pills. So even going forward, if we were to lose is a win-win, we think. But we don't think we're going to lose.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 and 98.9 FM. It's a look at New Hanover County's lawsuit against opioid manufacturers and distributors, and a check-in with Brunswick County on their pending lawsuit and on the work of the Opioid Addiction Task Force. Pat Sykes and Woody White are here today, and they're taking your questions. You can call us during this live Thursday discussion at 910-343-1138, or you can email us at coastline@whqr.org. And when we come back, we'll hear from Brian from Wilmington. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Today we're exploring how local governments are proceeding with public policy development on the opioid epidemic, which has hit the Cape Fear region particularly hard. With us to answer your questions on this Thursday, Woody White, New Hanover County Chair of the Board of Commissioners, and Pat Sykes, Brunswick County Commissioner. And we want to hear from you today. Do you feel as though public policy is keeping up with what we understand about opioid addiction? Have you known someone who's come through their own addiction crisis? Do you have questions about where the region is headed? You can call us during this live Thursday discussion at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. Brian from Wilmington writes, "The opioid crisis is the product of out-and-out greed. The pharmaceutical companies were predatory and misleading in their marketing strategies, and sadly, the doctors were complicit in this. Anyone that is a medical doctor should not have believed," writes Brian, "the claims that these companies made about the chance of addiction being low with these substances." He says, "I've lost more friends than I care to say to this problem. The state should prosecute. Thank you for your attention in this matter." Pat Sykes, are Brian's remarks along the lines of what you're hearing from the folks working on the Opioid Addiction Task Force in Brunswick County?
I'm not on the task force, but I am on the health board. Yes, it is what we're hearing. As we attend all these task force meetings across the country, because I'm on the National Justice and Public Safety, you're constantly hearing the same stories over and over, how loved ones have been affected and how it's destroyed the whole family and the loss of loved ones, trying to figure out what to do to stop the epidemic. That's why we're doing the lawsuit.
Woody White, skeptics of these types of suits, and just in doing some research for this discussion, I was just kind of looking around at what other municipalities and counties around the nation had filed similar suits. This is a thing. This yeah. seems to be a pretty big industry for these lawyers. And there were probably hundreds of municipalities and counties that have filed or are filing similar suits or have had discussions about it. One county in Indiana stood out as they voted down they voted against filing a lawsuit. And one of the things a commissioner said was, it's not the counties that are going to enjoy any kind of remuneration from this. It's counties won't see any money. It's going to be the lawyers, just like in the big tobacco lawsuits, that get all the rewards, all the money, and make themselves rich from this. Is that accurate?
Well, that's an opinion that sounds to me to be very uninformed and uneducated. I don't know who that commissioner is in Indiana. I do think lawyers will make money if they're successful. I hope they do. I hope they make a lot of it, because if they make a lot of it, it means that we recovered a lot for our suffering citizens and for the first responders and the governmental services that are strained more and more every day. So there are some naysayers that are trying to compartmentalize this to say, oh, this is just a class action, a bunch of wealthy, you know, attorneys are trying to make money. I can't comment on that. I run a law firm myself. I don't handle cases like this. What the cases that I handle, Rachel, predominantly over the last 10 years have been around addictions. I sit in my office every day with moms and dads, grandmas and granddads who have a grandson or a son or a daughter who got hurt in a basketball game or fell off a ladder at work or got in a car wreck and took what the doctors told them to take because the doctors, I believe, fundamentally thought they were doing what was in their patient's best interest for the most part. Now, there are going to be outliers. These people aren't drug addicts. They didn't wake up one day and said, I'm going to start, you know, taking drugs. Most of them had jobs, had families, led normal lives, and got addicted to things that they were told were good for them. And I sit there in my office and I go to court with these people because it then turns into heroin. The doctors ultimately cut the source off. The spigot dries up. And these pills are so incredibly powerful. They turn good people into drug addicts, not bad people. Drug addicts aren't bad people.
And what's the difference?
I think addiction is a disease, Rachel, like anything else that you think of in the word disease. Now, some people don't think that. If you live in certain communities and you go to, in certain areas and you limit your exposure, you don't think that. But that's what's different about opioids. There's a real racial component here. And by that I mean we've had this type of epidemic before in the 80s and 90s with crack cocaine. You know the difference? Almost exclusively in the black community. And so for the most part, the white community kind of ignored it, said, oh, that's the projects, or those are, you know, parts of town that we don't worry about. And you saw disparities in sentencing guidelines. You saw disparities in prosecutions. Well, now opioids is almost exclusively a white person's problem. Now, that's an interesting thing to insert race into this dialogue, but those are the facts, because now you have opioid addicts in landfall, in gated communities, in wealthy, middle class, poor. It's everywhere.
Is that why the power centers are finally sitting up and taking notice and trying to do something about it?
Of course, of course. We hate to admit that, but I mean, let's be honest here. No question about it. No, why did it take 20 years for crack cocaine and powder cocaine disparities to be finally recognized by the United States Sentencing Commission? It took over two decades. This has taken 4 or 5 years for us to pay attention, because normal people in communities that weren't exposed to that over time, it's hitting every family, it's hitting every business, it's hitting every community, and that's the definition of an epidemic and an emergency, and that's why the president has said that.
You're listening to Coastline. It's an exploration of recent public policy initiatives and a lawsuit filed by New Hanover County to deal with the opioid crisis. Here answering your questions on this Thursday, Woody White, chairman of New Hanover County's Board of Commissioners, and Pat Sykes, Brunswick County Commissioner. We want to hear from you. You can call us during this live Thursday show at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. Leslie from Wilmington, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question I'm hoping to seek your input on. I am, basically from background, I'm a 56-year-old professional Caucasian who injured my back about 30 years ago and fractured my spine. And since then, I've had three back fusions. And I only have one vertebrae left intact. I have degenerative disc disease and spondylosis and have herniated disc. Now, I have been on pain medicine since my accident, and I would not be able to live and walk, even walk and stand without pain medication to allow me to do things that most people normally do. But I always hear about the wanting to shut down the pain clinics and the people that are addicted to it. But what about the people that need the medicine to live?
You're what, talking about...
How do you separate those two?
Ongoing pain management.
Correct, yes.
Woody White.
Well, ma'am, first off, I'm sorry you've led what sounds like the majority of your life in pain. What I would say to you is you must have very careful and conscientious doctors that manage it appropriately and prescribe medicines in the appropriate way. No one is asking, even in this lawsuit, that these pills be outlawed. They're simply asking that they be treated and monitored in the same way as we regulate other things. And most doctors get it right. There's no question about that. This suit is not about doctors or physicians' practices. And I think there is clearly a place for these types of substances on short-term basis. And, you know, if you get in a car wreck and the doctor has prescribed 90 days worth of these pills and you're fine after a week or two, but you keep taking them, that's where the problems begin. And so you're seeing a lot of legislation that trims down some of those approaches to prescription. So it'll be a case-by-case, patient-by-patient analysis like it used to be.
Leslie, thank you so much for that call. Woody, you might be alluding to the STOP Act that was relatively recently passed
Yes.
by the state legislature, partly designed to limit and control the distribution of opioids for pain. By enforcing that statewide database of doctors' prescriptions and limiting the length of a prescription that a doctor can write, is this part of the answer in your estimation? There hasn't been a lot of opposition to the STOP Act, but a little bubbling up under the surface, there was some scuttlebutt about, well, now state lawmakers are getting into the business of doctors who went to medical school.
That's right, which is very dangerous. So I would leave a lot of that to the professionals. Again, 95% of doctors get it right. I think it's those cases, and I can just speak anecdotally. I can't speak as a scientific or a medical expert, but I represented a special forces member of a SEAL team one time. You can imagine how much pain they go through jumping and falling and getting shot at. And over a period of time, it accumulates. It adds up. He got so injured one time, he was prescribed these things. And he would tell you a story about how his prescription turned into an addiction, and how he lost everything on heroin from the streets. Now, you think, oh, these people are drug addicts. And this goes back to what I said a few minutes ago. Some are. Some have made very poor choices, and some are criminals, and some break in houses and steal, and it's bad. Most of these types of things that we're seeing in this epidemic, however, are normal people that have a condition. This guy lost his commission, got booted out, homeless, got arrested, charged with felonies, and he had spent a half of a life defending his country exceptionally well all over the world. That's when you know you have a problem. What was the doctor doing? Who was monitoring it? What happened? And so those are, you know, that's, again, just an anecdote of one person, one case, but it does inform how I view some of these policy choices.
And this is one of the confusing elements of this issue, because I think up to very recently, people have just assumed doctors know what they're doing in prescribing opioids for pain, and they certainly understand what the limits are of this and when they could become dangerous. Where has the supply been going awry? Is it doctors who are just trying to make money on the sale of opioids? Is it misinformed doctors? Is it, in the lawsuit, it talks about kind of subverting the laws, the reporting laws and the distribution laws that are on the books. How is this happening? And are the gatekeepers at fault? Pat Sykes.
That's going to be hard to answer totally, because if they fail to disclose the risk of the medicine to the doctors, because the doctors are not creating the medicine or producing the medicine, it's these pharmaceutical companies, and they have to test and know the risk of adding so much pain killers or whatever, opioids, to the medicine. If they did not disclose that to the doctors would not be aware. But you have to look to what Woody said earlier about the lawsuits. It's, even if we lose, people will learn about it. More laws will come in play. Doctors will be more informed. I think more people will be more looking out to see what's going on to try to protect the person. It's not about us individually. It's about protecting everybody from the abuse. And I think if you have a good doctor, such as, was it Leslie that called in?
Yes.
You know, it's great that you have a good doctor that knows where your limit is and how much you need. And that's where the doctors are needing to be suspicious when patients come in and they just want a refill. So I think it's very important for us.
We're talking with Pat Sykes of the Brunswick County Board of Commissioners and Woody White, New Hanover County Board of Commissioners, about the opioid epidemic, the filing of New Hanover County's lawsuit, and what Brunswick County is doing to address this public health crisis. We had a call from Alan in Wilmington. He asked about the supply of fentanyl from China. How do we plan to stop that supply? Woody White, is this part of the landscape from New Hanover County's perspective?
Well, it's not part of this particular suit. That's part of the dark web. That's part of what law enforcement is trying to figure out. And I'll tell you, 2 or 3 years ago, I represented a guy that had figured it all out, was getting stuff shipped from China. The law enforcement officers had no idea, stumbled across it. It was a lot of stuff. And I learned how far behind our federal and state law enforcement and prosecutors were, due to no fault of their own, really. But just in this dark web and in this cryptocurrency market here, you go online, you bid for a price, you get substances shipped from Canada or China or Southeast Asia or somewhere, you're dealing with one of six anonymous sources, and you go with the lowest cost provider, and a box shows up. It's remarkable. So that's the gentleman's question there, is tuned into, okay, what are we going to do about that? Things are happening on the law enforcement side to start unraveling that mystery. But that's a real problem. But that's a different topic, really.
Now, Pat Sykes.
Yeah, just to update you a little bit on that, the Trump task force has addressed that. So they are working to see what they can do. And I'm sure once that task force continues, there will be some new mandates of stuff being shipped to our country.
And Pat Sykes, I want to unpack just some of the recommendations from the local opioid addiction task force. I understand you're not on that board, but as a commissioner, you've heard some of those recommendations. First, though, let's hear from Curtis in Wilmington. Curtis, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Thank you. First, I want to say what the county commissioners are doing is first unprecedented, and I support it completely. I want to say that it's a as Woody, I think the word he used was scourge. I think it is a scourge, and I think it needs to be addressed. I just am very, very, as a taxpayer, as you know, someone who's been here for decades, I'm just so skeptical of one group of people being left out. The primary point of distribution is a licensed professional, who is constantly having to, re-educate themselves, re-educate themselves. And it's, we've known for decades that this, as Woody again has said, a tremendously powerful drug. Just to, you know, if I can, you know, I had a problem with my eye, and I had to show up at the doctor's every 2 days just to get eye drops. I only could get eye drops for a 24, 48-hour period. We're talking about opioids here. And certainly with doctors and doctors' offices having so many licensed people on staff, I just don't understand why they're being left out of a lawsuit. Is it that it's too difficult to go after them? And I understand the new legislation and how that wants to help. But I'm just saying, isn't it a bit unfair to just go after a drug company who, I mean, I understand some disclosure issues and those type of things, but it seems to me that doctors are being left out of this intentionally for some reason.
Woody White, is there a reason that the lawyers have decided not to go after the medical community, the actual providers? Thanks so much for your call, Curtis.
Yeah, Curtis hit on what is a very popular question, and I think it boils down to a few things. Most people that go in to see their doctor rely on advice their doctor gives, and their doctor gives it in good faith based on his or her training and experience and so forth. If there are individual addictions or things that come out of that because that doctor failed to manage that patient relationship, those are specific claims that that person might have against his or her doctor. This case is more about, and I know we're going to commercial. Curtis, go, if you haven't already, to our website and read the 160-page complaint. Get a cup of coffee, read the first 40 pages, and see what length these manufacturers went through.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. Woody White and Pat Sykes are here today, New Hanover and Brunswick County Commissioners, respectively, and they're answering your questions about the local government response to the opioid epidemic. You can call us during this live Thursday discussion at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. We're learning today about some recent policy initiatives to combat the opioid epidemic, as well as the reasons behind New Hanover County's lawsuit against opioid manufacturers and distributors. With us to answer your questions on this Thursday, Woody White, chairman of New Hanover County's Board of Commissioners, and Pat Sykes, Brunswick County Commissioner and representative on the boards of Trillium Health and Brunswick County's Health and Human Services. This is the last segment, so you have just a few minutes left to get your question in. You can call during the live Thursday discussion at 910-343-1138 or send an email to coastline@whqr.org. And Woody White, just before we went to break, a caller, Curtis, had asked about going after the medical community and wanted to ask you, in this lawsuit that New Hanover County has filed, you're alleging that opioid manufacturers misrepresented the addictive nature of these drugs, among other marketing allegations that you make that you say were fraudulent, did not represent the actual potential of these drugs. For a while now, the public and the medical community have been sold the idea that pain management is absolutely one of the most important steps in healing. It's harder to heal, studies have said, when patients are in pain. So is this bunk? Is this part of the science that this lawsuit is saying it's not actual science? That's fraudulent misrepresentation?
No, I'll answer that question in two ways. First, this patterns and falls in the wake of federal findings from the FDA on systematic and intentionally willful misrepresentations. McKesson paid a $150 million fine last year because they admitted and there was findings of fraud, etc. So I would encourage anybody that has any questions about what we are alleging in this lawsuit, A, we are not pioneers here. The federal government's already established this. We're one of 200 or so other local municipalities and counties and states across the country. We've just joined in a big suit because we feel it's strong for our region. But
why
go
then
sit down on the couch and pull up our website and read this lawsuit. Read the first 40 or 50 pages and then immerse yourself in the optics of how these companies went to such great lengths to employ high-paid mm-hmm. doctors and create studies and create conferences to convince these prescribing doctors that this is the safest, best stuff in the world. That's not true. It was false.
Since this is these lawsuits have been so widely signed on to by municipality, Brunswick County is about to file its own lawsuit. Why is this not a class action? Why are all of these municipalities filing these suits as individual entities? And for instance, the city of Wilmington has its own. Why are New Hanover County and the city of Wilmington not pursuing this together?
I'm no expert in that area of the law. I don't handle class action suits. But class actions are specific individuals. Counties, municipalities all have different state charters and different missions and different public policies. This is kind of a nuisance abatement theory that we're going under, and so it wouldn't really fit. But it's going to be handled essentially the same way, in my view.
We have a question, or actually a comment from Alexis from Wilmington. I had a joint replacement. The amount of painkillers they prescribed was excessive. I could have started a business with the times I've been discharged from the hospital, with all the times I have received painkillers, she says. Pat Sykes, you are on the board of Trillium Health. For folks who haven't been following the developments there, first, tell us what Trillium Health is and what its involvement with Brunswick County is.
Well, sometime back, the state regionalized the mental health board. It used to be you had your mental health in each county, but now it's regional. And Trillium is over the region and part of Brunswick, New Hanover, Pender. We just added some more counties, so there's quite a few. I would say at least 20-some counties involved. But Trillium, sometime back, promised a treatment center for this area, which we have pushed forward with Commissioner Rob Sapple.
New Hanover County Commissioner.
New Hanover County Commissioner. We have pushed for it. So it had come down that Trillium had lost some funding, so we were not going to get the treatment center. Brunswick County, in the process, before the treatment center was off the block, passed a resolution supporting the Stepping Up program that the North Carolina Association of County Commissioners were pushing that reduced individuals in our jails that would, you know, put them at a treatment center.
So the idea with that program is instead of putting people who are arrested for drug offenses who probably have substance abuse issues, get those people into treatment.
Yes. And that would reduce the inmates in the jail. So I was very supportive of that. So we were pushing, and then we got word that Trillium was not going to help with the treatment center here. So then Commissioner Sapple and I pushed forward, and he has been working with Trillium and different counties and different businesses to try to get the treatment center here. Right now, New Hanover County is on board. Brunswick County, we will be meeting with New Hanover County to be on board with that treatment center, and hopefully things will be moving forward to get that. And I think once we get that, we can help a lot of our people, hopefully, to move forward. It's not going to be a three-day thing that they get now. They can go to an area and get help, and they're in and they're out, and that's not beneficial.
Where is this treatment center supposed to be built?
In New Hanover County. Woody might be able to answer that better than me, the location.
Yeah, it's over near the hospital. It's a piece of land that they own, and we are very thankful for that's happening. And a lot of people have pushed for that, and I know for the last year and a half I've personally met with state legislators, cabinet members, congressional members asking for continued funding, because what is proposed is a good start, but it's woefully inadequate. It doesn't have a women's component. It doesn't have an adolescence component.
This is a treatment center for adult men only.
Correct, only men, and only 100 beds. It'll fill up in 24 hours, and it's voluntary, by the way. And so you have to want to change your life to go there. And, you know, so for the listeners out there listening to this, it's based on a Wake Med model that has an 87% success rate. So you imagine 100 people walking in those doors, and 18 to 24 months later, 87 of them walking out and getting jobs and going back to their families and changing their lives.
How much is New Hanover County spending on this treatment center?
Zero new dollars. It's already dollars that's kind of in our budget that we contract with Trillium anyway. They're just being reallocated.
What has the county allocated for this?
Rachel, I'm not dodging your question. I don't know the answer. Okay. I think we are contracted yearly at maybe $2.4, $2.5 million already in existing services that the state gives us that we parcel out, so to speak. So we're not committing any new dollars, but I tell you what, we would certainly be willing to, because of how important this is, not just for what Pat said about jail population, but because it's the right thing to do.
How much is Brunswick County willing to contribute to the Trillium Treatment Center?
We don't know yet. Once we have our meeting with New Hanover and we sit down and discuss it, we need that figure before we do our budget this year.
And is there a ballpark? Is there sort of a range that Brunswick County is considering?
No, we haven't.
I mean, would they meet New Hanover County, considering?
Well, it'd be hard to meet New Hanover County. New Hanover County has more tax dollars to be able to spend more. Also, there's sales tax that go into the 2.5 that Woody was talking about. I think ours is, I want to say 1 point something, but I can't remember at this point. But I think once we get our budget and we meet with them, we're willing to work, because I think it's very important.
And at what point do you expect to break ground on this?
This year. It's going to happen. I'm hope to make a very positive prediction that it'll be this year. And I want to say one other thing about this. The hospital has been and is an increasingly important partner in this. They are the brand for this region for health, changing health, delivering preeminent health services, and their participation in diverting people from the emergency room is critical. And they have really stepped up over the last 90 days to engage federal officials. I know John Gizdik's personally talked with Secretary Cohen about some of this. We've facilitated some of those talks. So things are happening. And, you know, it's hard to get excited about building a treatment center for people addicted to drugs, but I'm telling you, in this region, we have so many people that will benefit, and the all of us will benefit when we have less people breaking in homes and taking drugs and using and being addicted that are contributing to society instead.
It's not a victimless situation.
No, it's
because
not.
It doesn't just affect the addict and the addict's family.
Correct.
It's, what other cost does a county incur?
Well, if you look at our jails, I mean, our poor deputies having to handle people that are addicted to drugs, and it would be very hard to handle. You know, you're isolating them. You're worried about them dying in the jail because they're not getting their medicine that they want, or the pills or whatever. But to me, it would be very stressful to work in the detention center.
We have an email from Carolyn. She writes, I think the opioid crisis stems from a perfect storm, including the addition of pain as the fifth vital signs in 2001, lack of training on dealing with pain and pain medication in medical schools, and the view by Americans that you can actually totally eliminate pain. Adding pain as a vital sign was important because it meant people didn't have to tough it out, for example, burn patients. However, if you aren't trained in prescribing medications, then you do the best you can, especially when one considers the conflicting information provided early on as to the addictive properties of drugs like OxyContin. As a long-term pain sufferer and someone who's used methadone to control my joint pain for more than 20 years, there's no such thing as total lack of pain. And then she goes on to talk about alternative pain management therapies like massage, physical therapy, yoga, even counseling and other modalities.
Well, Carolyn, Carolyn's personal experience, it sounds like to me, has led her to be one of the most informed and up-to-date individuals on how this has created it. And I couldn't have put it any, nobody could have put that any better. And you know what? Knowing what she knows, and I'll single out one defendant in this lawsuit, McKesson Corporation, they know what she knows. They are a $400 billion company. They're third in the Fortune 500. You know who the top two are? Exxon and Apple. McKesson's third. They're highly motivated to move their product. They're highly motivated to ensure people that they work and that they're not addictive. And Carolyn just pinpointed it. When they got those vital signs changed and the way that the pain medicine is prescribed and managed, you can track their profits accordingly. And the same with a lot of these defendants, by the way.
Want to make sure, we just have a few minutes left. Pat Sykes, the Opioid Addiction Task Force in Brunswick County threw out a few things for Brunswick County commissioners to consider that totaled to, I think, about $850,000 worth of recommendations.
I think it was about a million.
About a million. Okay. One of those was creating a full-time position of prevention manager for Brunswick County, who would kind of be the coordinator of all the services. Funding treatment within Brunswick County for therapy and medications, establishing systems of therapy. Which of those recommendations jump out to you as something the county is likely to or probably should pursue?
Well, I guess first you need to consider how much involvement should the government be. My feelings is the treatment center, because government's responsibility would be the mental health. We're also here for safety reasons, like for our detention centers to make sure people are safe. The treatment center is still the main focus for me. Any other area, we had a caller or email came in about the lady that said that she was overprescribed medication. I think it's important, too, that each citizen takes a responsibility for their actions. I know that if I go to the doctor or I have surgery, when they prescribe the medication, I never get that medication fully filled. I only ask for a few pills because I don't want any addiction, and most of the time I don't even take them. It's just like for a toothache. You know, years ago, people used ice. You know, when you had your wisdom tooth pulled, they don't even do that anymore. And we got to get back to those basics where people use common sense instead of medicine.
Woody White, going back to the lawsuit and the proceedings that took place on Tuesday in U.S. District Court with Judge Dan Polster, in his opening remarks, he said he wasn't just interested in moving money around from these drug manufacturers and distributors to the plaintiffs. He said he wants to dramatically reduce the number of pills out there and make sure the ones out there are being used properly. He says a lot of briefs and a lot of trials are not going to solve this problem. Where do you see this going now?
Well, I tell you, when I read it, I was stunned at how articulate he was and the grasp of the problem he sees, but also his role as a federal judge in doing something about it. You look to the legislature to do something typically, but I think governments have failed at every level in managing this. And so one of the things that he might be able to do is create a federal order that's similar to the STOP Act that applies across the country that says, you know, here's how we're going to prescribe, and he'll solicit scientific and medical experts. I'm speculating here. I'm kind of guessing based on how I interpreted his comments. Another thing he might do is require these companies, if they're amenable and if there's some settlement that might be attained, to fund regional treatment centers or parcel it out. Who knows? But there's a lot of opportunity for success in his comments.
And I do want to note that we have heard from a doctor from New Hanover Regional Medical Center. We will post his comments online about pain management and the position that doctors are in. Thank you so much for that remark. That's this edition of Coastline. Pat Sykes, Woody White, thank you both so much for being with us today.
Thank you,
Rachel. Thank you for having us.
Coastline's technical director is Ken Campbell. Producer is Rachel Keith. Production assistant is Caitlin Hanrahan, who is also chief engineer today. Caroline DeVries is our webmaster. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at whqr.org, get the podcast, or find it on the WHQR app. Tune in for the rebroadcast of this episode Sunday afternoon at 2. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.